It is hour number three of Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey. We pick out the stems and seeds at 2:45. A college team is considering Jason Garrett as their next head coach. A school I always thought was a bit smarter than that. At 2:30, why does December 8th matter? Birthdays for a couple of former hotties who jumped the plastic surgery shark. In a mere minutes, it's our weekly chat with the great Ari Temkin on the Dallas Cowboys and Big 12 football. I'm Trey Elling, and sitting across from me is Chad Hastings.
Yes, indeed. Lots of stuff going on in the football world today. We talked about Quinn Ewers earlier, going to make that visit to Texas this weekend. You got offensive linemen that have decommitted from Oklahoma. Texas is certainly interested in those, and we are a week away from signing day there. Also, just real quick, and then we can get into this with Ari at some point too, but in the Big 12 world, Trey, there's a story out there now that Oklahoma is going to hire Jeff Lebby as the OC from Ole Miss.
Yes, that has been rumored going back to last week when Venable's name first surfaced. And from an X's and O's standpoint, it does make a lot of sense. But you do wonder if he is bringing too much baggage with him from his past coaching stops, most notably the role that he was in at Baylor when Art Briles went down in the years preceding that.
He is scheduled to be in Norman today, and average annual salary reported by ESPN just under $2 million to be the OC for Oklahoma.
I'm just kind of glad that they didn't go out and get Joe Brady. Like, leave that to a Miami or another school that Texas isn't having to play on an annual basis.
It's a good point. Yeah, we'll keep watching for where Joe Brady ends up. All right, let's go to the Vaqueros Cafe and Cantina hotline and bring in Ari Temkin, Dallas Cowboys Radio Network, Big 12 Radio on Sirius XM. Ari, how are you?
I'm great, guys. How are you?
Good. Since I just mentioned it, let's start there and we'll work our way back around to the Cowboys. But Venable's in as head coach for OU, and now the reports are they're going to go with Jeff Lebby at OC. What do you make of that that combo?
Yeah, I mean, I think that Trey pretty much hit the nail on the head there in terms of the baggage. I mean, this is Art Briles' son-in-law. There's some pretty questionable things that happened, obviously, his past at Baylor, but not only that, but then just in defending Art Briles to a certain degree that just doesn't sit well with a lot of people. This is a really tough conversation to continue to have. It doesn't mean we shouldn't have it. It's just tough to navigate, given the history, given everything involved. So, you know, from that perspective, it's a lot, and I'm sure it was a conversation that was had amongst the OU brass before they made the hire, but there's no question he knows offensive football, had a lot of success working with Lane Kiffin, and they needed a home run on offensive coordinator because obviously Oklahoma has buttered its bread on offense and has lost a ton of recruits, has had a lot of key commitments, and players leave for the portal on the offensive side of football. So at this point, I'm not even sure who is and is not on the Oklahoma roster, but I do know that Caleb Williams at this point is still on their roster, and you know, you obviously have to make a short-term play to make a coordinator hire an offense that sits well with Caleb Williams. And quite frankly, if Caleb Williams doesn't leave, I'd have a ton of respect for him. I mean, either way, you leave because you go to a school for a coach that's no longer there. But if you stay, it would be incredible from my perspective. So, yeah, I like the hire. There's obvious baggage there that you have to bring up, and it's a tough conversation, but it doesn't mean it's not an important conversation to have. And I think Venables, to me, is similar to Dave Aranda in that we're talking about long-time defensive assistant coaches who have worked under really successful and good head coaches in their past. And for Venables, it seems like even more of a slam dunk than it was for Aranda. And obviously, Aranda's been an incredible hire so far for Baylor.
Yes, he has been. Ari, the hottest name in the transfer portal market right now is one Quinn Ewers, leaving Ohio State after just 3 or 4 months, having cleared a cool, I don't know, $3 million in the process, and coming back home to play someplace in this state. At least that's how it seems right now. What do you make of this overall situation, and do you have a prediction on where he ultimately ends up?
Yeah, I do think he ends up at Texas. I do. Certainly from the indication that I've gotten, it seems like it's just an inevitability. You know, Tech is in it, obviously, and for good reason. I think the Zach Kitley hire from Western Kentucky, and his dad is a legendary track and field coach at Tech. And Wes Kitley, you know, it's a guy that learned under Cliff Kingsbury. He's got the Texas Tech culture, obviously, from Lubbock. I think that's, you know, that's the push they're making. I mean, it's the guy that Patrick Mahomes speaks really highly of, so that's going to move the needle in terms of recruiting and transfers. But, I mean, this is a kid, and Quinn Ewers that, you know, committed to Texas initially, as we know, and then decommitted, only to then, you know, reclassify and get to the 2021 class. And, you know, look, I mean, it's funny to think that if he didn't decommit from Texas and spend the year at Ohio State, you know, how different would things be? I mean, it kind of seems like he'd be coming into Texas at the perfect time to where, you know, there's going to be a ton of roster turnover. I expect a ton of players to still leave in the portal. I expect them to flush those guys out and then, you know, replenish through the portal and in recruiting. And I mean, you know, this was not a great recruiting class. Texas had a lot of misses here. And I think the Lincoln Riley news, the Brian Kelly news, all that stuff has really worked out for the benefit of Texas. I mean, Kobe McKenzie is a guy that had been committed to Oklahoma for 3 years. And so, you know, he then commits to Texas after Lincoln Riley leaves. Like, that's going to happen across the board now for Texas, where they're going to be the beneficiaries of some, you know, commitments that had, you know, had not gone their way. So I expect by this time next week, when the early signing period is underway, that Texas is going to have a really good class, which 2 weeks ago it didn't seem like that was going to be the case. So it's a long way to say that Sark is tasked with rebuilding this roster. I think if you bring in a guy like Quinn Ewers, which I do expect Texas to end up being the place that he goes, and then you just couple that with Xavier Worthy and some of the playmakers they've had in offense. Obviously, we know the running back situation, Bijan Robinson, and you know, this team could be drastically better next year than it was this year.
Are you a fan of Texas being at the forefront of the evolution of NIL with the deal that was announced earlier this week, Horns with Hearts, which is going to immediately hook up offensive linemen on this roster to the tune of $50,000 per year?
Hell yeah, I am. Absolutely. Well, I mean, you got the money, spend it. It's, you know, look, this has been going on in college athletics for 100 years. It's just been the dark side of college sports, and it shouldn't have been, but it is. And so now it's being brought to the light, and this is the way it should have gone. If you've got people that are supporting your football program that are wanting to spend their money to invest in that program, then why shouldn't they? People are allowed to waste their money however they want. And, you know, and that's what this is. It's very interesting to me, the type of market that is starting to materialize when it comes to NIL. I think when this thing started, we had sort of our ideas of how it would go. And in some ways, those things are happening. And then there are a lot of ways in which the market's materialized in a completely different way. And I love it. The Clark Field Collective, the Hearts with Horns. Yeah. If you've got people that are willing to support the athletic department and players through their monetary means, and you do, and this is happening everywhere, then by all means do it. It's not cheating. It is well within the laws of the image like this. And it's capitalism. People, like, this is what I understand. People that are very pro-capitalist suddenly become anti-capitalist when it comes to this stuff. Like, it makes no sense to me. So it's not cheating. It is what it is. It's always been like this. At least now it's sort of front and center for everybody to see. And so nobody's at a distinct advantage or disadvantage in that regard.
Well, even if you come at it from an anti-capitalistic standpoint, Ari, these guys are important to this billion-dollar industry as anybody, and they've been hooked up the least up to this point. You should be more forth than anyone else out there.
No question. No question. I mean, I've always been a pay-the-players kind of person. And, you know, and so it's taken a long time, but players are finally getting what they deserve. Now, look, there are different elements to this that have to be managed and maneuvered from a coaching perspective and, you know, from an organizational perspective. Like, I get all that, but that doesn't mean it's not a good enough reason to do it. You know, like, oh yeah, now coaches have to manage, you know, a fourth string quarterback like Quinn Ewers making $1.2 million on a roster with offensive linemen that might not be getting anything, right? Like, you have to manage that. Well, okay, but that's another element to what you have to do as a coach. Sorry, you're being paid $2 million as a coordinator to do that. So figure it out. You know, you're being paid $8 million a year as a head coach to do that. Figure it out. So, yeah, I mean, a big part of the reason that programs have the money, the disposable income, to pay off a coach to not work and then subsequently pay another coach you know, gobs and gobs of money to work is because they haven't had to pay the labor force. And they still don't, which obviously is going to benefit the universities too.
Talking with Ari Temkin, Big 12 Radio on Sirius XM, and of course, Dallas Cowboys Radio Network, 11 a.m. pregame for Cowboys and Washington. Ari, let's start on the front line, and the story's out that, you know, Mike McCarthy's going to be back. That's obviously big for the Cowboys, but this front line discussion, Sweat is in COVID protocol because he tested positive for Washington. Talk to me about that Cowboy offensive line. What do you think it will consist of this week? Because the one thing Washington can do defensively, even without Sweat, they can get after you on that front.
Yeah, and Chase Young, too. It's kind of amazing right. How they've, you know, started to play so much better without Chase Young, and not to say they're playing better without him, but they just – this is kind of what we expected Washington to be all year. And, you know, I like the way that they've now backloaded divisional games because you're getting a better representation of what these teams are. You know, you have, you know, teams that maybe underperform, in the Cowboys' case, overperform the first 7-8 weeks of the season. Then they settle in, they maybe bottom out a little bit. So, like, I hate when divisional games are played early in the season, but teams are still trying to feel who they are. I love the way that this season is closing with, you know, all of these games across the division are backloaded to really make sure that these divisional races are being, you know, fortified here at the end of the year. But, yeah, I mean, this is a very intriguing situation from a, you know, Mike McCarthy standpoint, considering, you know, I remember my buddy Dave Hellman from DallasCowboys.com asked McCarthy last year about some changes along the offensive line. And, you know, he sort of quipped very, you know, condescendingly, like, this isn't fantasy football. You can't just plug guys in. It's about, you know, commitment to the same group of players along the offensive line, continuity and chemistry. It's like that. Hellman and I have just laughed all year about that because it seems like a joke that the same coach that would say that would now have the sort of, you know, indecision here along the offensive line that he's had this year. I mean, it was a couple of games ago where, you know, they shelved in a new group for one series. Continuity, fantasy football, like, what are we doing here? So, look, I know we've all gone back and forth on this over the course of the year. I think McGovern, the role that Connor McGovern had when Connor Williams was in the interior of that offensive line, was better suited for this Cowboys offense. You know, so I like the idea of Connor Williams returning to his spot. I understand the penalties were there, but he just gives you more of the athleticism. And this is, I think, what the Cowboys have been lacking when they tried to pull Connor McGovern and use him. But the difference here is that Connor Williams is more athletic. Connor McGovern is more of a thumper, more of a big-bodied guy, which if you've got Tyron Smith next to him, then you probably could use the athleticism more. So to me, it's who they are. Williams seems like the better fit. And then I want them to get back to that Hulk package with McGovern as a lead blocker. I see the Cowboys offense go back to when they were like humming and playing so well. And I just see McGovern as that lead blocker in the Hulk package. I just want that back. So yeah, I'd like to see them go with Williams left guard.
Hey, Ari, go ahead.
And then as I'm thinking about it, I'm like, oh yeah, how about right tackle? And you know, that one to me is less obvious. Insofar as Lyle Collins has played that well. Lyle Collins has not played well enough to where you say, like, give him the job. He obviously has a history there, but, you know, I'm curious to see. I bet they'll go back to Steele this week. But, you know, I think it's something to watch for, certainly, and it's a moving target.
Ari, Dak has been surprisingly inaccurate on the intermediate and deeper stuff, save a few exceptions, for the last few weeks now. Do you think that shoulder injury from the preseason is starting to surface again?
You know, Jerry was asked that this morning at 105 through the Fan, and he basically attributed it to the receivers. But he did use the word sometimes when describing receivers not running routes properly or not being on the same page as the quarterback. And so I guess the best way to put it is, and we've talked about this for weeks now, guys, it's everything that went right for this offense is now going wrong. You know, it was like they couldn't call – Kellen Moore couldn't call a bad play – and the running back was just rolling along, and the receivers were great, and the quarterback was great. And, I mean, now it's a mess. Dak has not been great. He's been great at times, and he's had some great series. He's made some ridiculous throws over the last couple of weeks, but it's just not consistent enough. So it's one of those things where it's in football, everything impacts everything else. So we want it to be like really obvious and easy and prepackaged for us. It's Dak. it's Dak's fault. He's not elite. That's what people want. But it's not just one thing. It is probably at times receivers not doing their jobs or not running the right routes or dropping balls. It's at times Dak Prescott missing. Like, there's no other way to look at it. He's just missing throws at times. It's the running back situation has gone completely out the window in terms of the dominance of the running game to start the year and where it is now. I'm of the belief that you sit down Zeke Elliott for a handful of weeks here and try to get him back to as healthy as he possibly can, because he's clearly not healthy and he's not going to get healthier. And the retort to that is, well, you don't have a guy that can pass block like he can. And I get that, but at this point, I need a more effective Zeke Elliott, because my straight line between the Cowboys offense being a dominant elite level offense and where they are now is Zeke Elliott's ineffectiveness. So I'm going to ride Tony Pollard and I'm going to try to do things to minimize the situation that I'm putting my quarterback in with a running back that can't pass block like Zeke can. But I just, you're not getting healthier, obviously, playing games. I need him to be, I need him to have some time off to get as healthy as he possibly can. But that's the tough one for me, is, that I'm not going to say the running game makes the offense go, but it's clearly the one thing that's fallen off a cliff of late when you look at this Cowboys' lack of success on offense.
Or at the very least, if he's that good of a pass blocker, make him your third down back temporarily, so he is getting less carries from series to series, and you can throw him in there every third or fourth series.
Yeah. I mean, but the thing is, it's almost like you have to, like, he's the type of guy that you're, like, you talk to people inside the Cowboys organization, like, you try to get him off the field, like, you can't take him off the field. So I almost feel better, like, if you, like, take your pads away, take your jersey away, like, you can't play. Because if he's suiting up, like, he's not going to be okay being your third down back. You're going to have to keep him off the field.
Yeah. I'm not sure what you guys are talking about. I've been watching these games. Somebody is keeping him off the field. Kellen Moore, are y'all not watching what's going on? I mean, he's on the field, but he's not really been a part of this offense in a while. He's getting well in front of our eyes, because he's not getting any carries.
Meanwhile, Dak is sailing balls to the sidelines.
Yeah, no, clearly it's going to be a chunking team. The question, Ari, is can they chunk their way to 9 wins this week? 9-4 will be the record if they get it. Now that we're to it, 2 out of 3 against Washington, they're at Washington Sunday. Do they get this win?
Yeah, I believe so. Look, I think, I think the thing is, I'm waiting for this elite level offense to return, and maybe it won't ever. But, at this point, let's just see some baby steps in terms of being a credible and consistent offense. And I just think, they're head and shoulders the best team in the division. I still maintain that. And so now is your chance to prove it. You've got, your final stretch here where you're playing all divisional opponents except for the Cardinals. So go win your division by beating up the teams in your division.
Yep, that is what they will try to start doing on Sunday. Ari Temkin, Dallas Cowboys Radio Network, 11 a.m. pregame on Sunday for that one. Big 12 Radio on Sirius XM as well, at Ari Sports on Twitter. Ari, we appreciate the time, man. Have a good week.
Great talk to you as always. Be well, guys. Take care.
Yeah, good stuff there. Thanks, Ari. Little NIL talk, Big 12 talk. There's a lot going on. And again, to start the conversation from the Big 12 perspective, it looks like it will be Jeff Lebby as the OC for Oklahoma. They're going to bring him from Ole Miss. Art Briles' son-in-law. We've been talking about the son and son-in-law, Art Briles, of course, Kendall Briles, and Jeff Lebby earlier this year were thought of as big names on the OC front. Are they going to get other jobs? Looks like Jeff Lebby is going to be going from Ole Miss to Oklahoma and hang out with Brent Venables starting next year. All right, up next, it's December 8th and why it matters to us. We'll get you stems and seeds before we get out of here. A few things to get into, including, though, again, that update on the Cowboys-Washington game and some other big injury stories from around pro sports, specifically a big one for the Seahawks. Not that they're really a playoff discussion team, but anyway, it's a big name. We'll mention it later on the Horn.
Shirts and Skins.
Barracuda. Oh, mercy. On a day where Trey's played a few folks that have good pipes, this is probably the best pipes he's found so far in the Hall and Oates playlist. With all due respect to Daryl, with all due respect to Billy Joel, with all due respect to Lou Gramm, a Foreigner, I'm going to say Ann's got the best pipes you've played today.
Really?
I'm going to say she's got the best pipes.
Okay.
And Daryl's right there to me.
I love her voice.
A huge Hall and Oates guy, but man, that's big time. And that song, of all the ones they did, it might hold up the best. A lot of their stuff does, but man, Barracuda is never not cool.
It's either that or Magic Man.
Yeah, Magic Man's good too. All right, so we've had Heart. We've had all the rest I mentioned. We've had Jay Giles Band as well, a little centerfold earlier. Trey's going off of that Hall & Oates playlist. We'll get one more of those before we get out of here. Remember, Rod and Kevin coming up as always with RBKD. And then at 7 o'clock tonight, it is Under the Lights, the Final Four coming up in Texas high school football. They'll have all kinds of cool guests for you, including the LBJ coach and running back as they try to get to the championship game among the other area teams trying to do that. Best of luck to all of our area teams. Remember, right here on the Austin Radio Network, Lake Travis, 3 o'clock. Saturday afternoon, Snoop's got the Flex pregame for you at 2:30 on that. Then after Under the Lights tonight, you get your normal Wednesday night lineup continuing with Fight Night as they get ready for a big UFC card. And we've got Sports Guys Talking Wrestling at 9. The wrestling world never dies. I'm really into this CM Punk and MJF thing going on in AEW, just in case you needed some more letters. All right, let's go December 8th here, Trey, and why it matters.
Why Today Matters, brought to you by Sinus and Snoring Specialist. Get sinus and snoring relief with Dr. Daniel Slaughter at Sinus and Snoring Specialist. 512-601-0303 or sinussnoringent.com.
All right. It is December the 8th. I mentioned earlier in the show, unfortunately, a sad day musically for a lot of people. It is the day John Lennon was killed. For us metalheads, it is also the day Dimebag Darrell was killed. Same day in 04 that he was killed. Both killed by fans. Never let your fandom get too crazy. Somebody reminded us on the text line today, Trey, another fan that killed the artist, Selena, ultimately was killed by a fan.
Not familiar enough with her story, but even I know that detail, so apologies for not mentioning that one earlier.
Just a gross, gross story there, too, and a horrible example of that. So please try to keep your fandom under control on this December 8th.
Was the guy who jumped out of the stands and stabbed Monica Seles, was he a fan?
Yeah, but he was a fan of Steffi Graf.
Yeah.
That was an interesting, and I've been digging into that story recently because it's one of my... It's not favorite, it's not the way to say it. It's one of the ones I always think of in tennis, a big what if in sports. He was a Graf fan. He wanted Steffi to be number one in the world again. Monica had just beaten her in... Monica had just won 8 of the last 12 majors. She beat Steffi at the French when Monica was 16 years old. And Monica had just taken 3 of the 4 Grand Slams in 2 straight years. And it pissed him off. So he did what he did, and after that, Trey, for the rest of their careers, Monica Seles had 1 major. Steffi Graf had 11.
Wow.
From that point on. But what that guy took from us tennis fans is one of the best matchups, rivalries we would have ever had. Women's side, it is my favorite head-to-head ever, and I love Martina and Chrissy. But there was nothing like Steffi and Monica. Monica was the kryptonite. Just like Nadal was for Federer, what she did to Steffi Graf, nobody else could do. Fascinating matches at the French, at Wimbledon. We had him in 90, 91, 92, and then that idiot took it from us from 93 moving forward. I wish I could know what tennis would have been like with Monica, man. She was unbelievable. And she recovered physically real quick. But psychologically, she couldn't ever get over it again.
You think he still watches women's tennis?
I don't know. I don't know what he's doing. I don't know if that dude's still even alive. I just know he's a whacked out Steffi Graf fan. By the way, little check mark in Steffi's category. I didn't know until recently. The players in the WTA got together and had a vote on whether or not Monica got to keep her number one status. And Steffi just refused to vote. She just stayed out of it. She's like, I'm not going to be a part of that.
But why?
They actually had a vote about whether or not she gets to keep her ranking or not after she gets stabbed at a tournament.
Why wouldn't Steffi Graf say, yeah, I vote that she gets to keep her ranking?
Because she's the person that gets to be... She thought voting on it itself made no sense and just didn't want to be a part of it.
Mm.
Yeah.
So for the WTA, they show bravery at times, including most recently with the women's tennis player who went missing.
Yeah, it's true.
And then came out with some very innocuous, non-heartfelt responses to people wondering what was going on with her, because she came out and admitted that she had been sexually assaulted by a high-ranking official within the Chinese government. Yeah. Goes missing because that's what China does. Well, the WTA said, no, this isn't okay. Like, it's right. clear there's something going on here. We need to see and speak with her. And until you do that, we are done playing tournaments here in China. And women's tennis is something that has really blown up in China, too. So it is affecting their bottom line, but they're showing a bravery where the NBA a couple years ago turned out to be outright cowards and speaking out against China.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And then you have John Cena, who learns how to apologize in Mandarin after he just says something very innocuous about Taiwan a little while back. But because China is such a big, since they are big Fast and Furious fans over there, I guess, and John Cena was a part of the Fast and Furious franchise at one point, he had to offer up an apology in Mandarin to keep China from disallowing the Fast and the Furious in that country.
That's crazy stuff, man. Elsewhere on your birthday list, today's Jim Morrison's birthday.
Okay.
Yeah, he would have been 78. He was never making 78, but
no.
Yeah, Jim Morrison has a birthday. One of the guys in Def Leppard, so I'll say that one for my wife. Sam Kinison.
Sam Kinison's birthday, also never making it to 78?
No, he would have been 68 today. He and Kim Basinger are exactly the same age.
Kim Basinger, who is one of two former hotties who unfortunately have just gotten too much work done at this point, that have birthdays today. You know the other one?
Because I think I have it on the list too. Hatcher?
They're real and they're spectacular, yeah.
Yeah, a little too much for you?
Yeah, and this only happened recently too. I'd seen pictures, I want to say, from 5 or 10 years ago, and it was like, all right, you're aging gracefully, but she went the route that so many others have now, unfortunately, and just doesn't look human anymore.
Yeah, Hatcher went down the Courtney Cox path a little bit.
That's a good way to put it. They were both on Cougar Town, too, weren't they?
Brunette, good-looking, somehow didn't think they were good-looking enough. Somebody told them something wrong, and then they ended up at the doctor's office. That's not good. All right, there's some reasons why today matters to us.
Real quick, it's also Philip Rivers' birthday today.
Oh, is that right?
Do you think he gets presents from each one of his kids on his birthday?
I hope so. Why else would you have so many kids?
The indentured servitude, for one.
They better all get him like a badass tie or whatever sweater he wants.
He doesn't need...
Is he finally done, by the way? Was it eight? It's eight, right?
He doesn't need... I guess, yeah, technically it's nine, I believe.
Eight or nine. Oh, it's nine.
Nine, because he and his wife, with all the kids, would have made one side of the football. They would have made a football team.
Okay.
So he doesn't need nine crappy ties, though.
Yeah, that's true.
Or nine crappy tie racks, either.
He needs to figure out how to spread that out every year.
He needs to convince them to pool their money for something cool.
Yeah, or if he needs nine different things, just tell them separately and figure it out. That's got to be a crazy Christmas, man. How long does that take? I was a part of a family that had two kids, and then we'd have a little bit of extended, and my mom videoed too much. So sometimes it'd take us like 8 hours to do Christmas. What does it take that family?
Well, they call it Chrismica in the Rivers household because it literally takes 8 days and nights to get through the Christmas presents.
You have to have one day per kid and then add another one at the end. Happy birthday to all those folks that are having a little December 8th birthday today. All right, coming up, Stems and Seeds. Before we get out of here, big injuries in the NFL. Couple of them. A sickness and an injury are going to affect the Cowboys-Washington game. We'll get you that in case you missed it. Also, the news around college football, including who's coming to visit this weekend, Longhorn fans. Oh, you're going to be interested, and you're going to want to compliment the mullet. This is The Horn.
Shirts and Skins.
Trey started with the idea of Hall & Oates radio playlist. Oh, and it ends in a nice spot. It ends on the Top Gun soundtrack.
Yes, it does.
Kenny Loggins. He was the master. He was the master of the movie song for a while.
Yeah, you know, we had a Kenny G documentary on HBO in their Music Box series.
Yeah.
I feel like Kenny Loggins deserves one of those, considering just how huge he was for movies in the 1980s.
I'd watch a Kenny Loggins one. I'd watch a Rick Springfield one. I'd watch, there's a lot of those guys. You're right, because the Top Gun stuff plus the Caddyshack thing is enough.
That alone.
But then he had a couple on the, what was the arm wrestling Stallone movie, Over the Top? He had a couple things that is like the only reason I think Over the Top is livable is some of the Kenny Loggins stuff. Honestly.
How dare you?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Defame some of those incredible arm wrestling scenes.
They are emotional. They are highly emotional.
And also the father-son dynamic.
Yeah. All right, I'll be honest. I've never seen it all the way through.
Oh, my God. Of course.
I've seen like 20 minutes of it, and I haven't seen the whole thing.
Well, thank goodness I spoke up, because otherwise there might be somebody out there who would think that...
I'm so sorry.
Over the Top is not worth their time. That movie is now on our list of films to review this offseason.
I will definitely check it out, but I love the song Meet Me Halfway. I think that's a great song. And the same.
How does that one go? You can meet me halfway.
No.
Meet me halfway.
No. Meet me halfway across the sky, out where the world belongs to only you and I.
You're gonna have to sing it.
Meet me halfway across the sky. Come on. Out where the world belongs to only you and I. You don't remember that? It's emotional. It's him and his son connecting.
He also did Footloose, by the way.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I forgot Footloose. The man was a monster.
I'd forgotten that one, too, until I pulled out the Spotify playlist.
The man was a monster of that one, too. I went to the arm wrestling movie, and I forot Footloose.
This is not going to sound very good for a sec, because I need to find the chorus.
Perfect. Get it. Come on, Kenny. Beautiful.
What was the song that went, you can meet me halfway, meet me halfway?
I don't know. I hope it didn't sound like that. That's good, though. I'm sure it was fantastic. All right, before we get out of here, let's go stems and seeds, because there's people hurt everywhere.
No stress, no seeds, no stems, no sticks.
Brought to you by AV Consultations, 255-8678, or go to avconsultations.com. We already told you Montez Sweat, COVID protocol because he tested positive. He's out for Washington against the Cowboys. Logan Thomas out against the Cowboys. He's out for all of it, IR now, because of a knee injury. You've also got Jamal Adams. Now, I know it's not a playoff team anymore, but Jamal Adams, Trey, he needs season-ending shoulder surgery, and he's a Seattle Seahawk.
That was impressive. Is he going to do some rehab with Shin-Soo Chu?
He is. Shin-Soo Chu is going to help him out with his shoulder surgery.
Hey, real quick, did you see the college that's considering hiring Jason Garrett? Is their next head coach?
No, but you previewed it, so why don't you land this one? Well, who is it?
Duke.
Shut up. They are not.
Yep.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
My God, they really don't care, do they? You going to go from Cutcliffe to him?
I guess.
Cutcliffe's actually like a respected guy among quarterbacks.
I know. He was there for a long time.
Yeah, that's crazy. All right. Also, CJ McCollum, get better soon. He's out with a collapsed lung. Yes, you can get seriously hurt in the NBA. CT scan revealed it. He was hurt on Saturday. Hopefully, he gets better quickly. Rod and Kevin coming up with RBKD, then Under the Lights at 7. Have a good evening. See you.